Brought to you by PrayLatin.com, makers of prayer cards featuring complete English phonetic renderings of Latin pronunciations. Perhaps one.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
One of the most fascinating saints of the 20th century was Padre Pio. His birth name is Francesco Forgione. I probably mispronounced that. I did look up how to pronounce it, but I have trouble with pronunciation. But that is his birth name, Francesco. Or Francis, as it is sometimes translated to. And he is credited with a great number of visions and prophecies and things. Many of those prophecies are nonsense. They're not actually anything he said. In fact, a good portion of aggravation in his life was that people found him so fascinating that they would believe anything attributed to him, that there were essentially distrustful, deceitful people who would try to apply to Padre Pio words of prophecy that he never, ever said. It caused him some consternation in his life, and he didn't have much patience for it. Well, he had more patience than I would have. He's a saint. But when people brought to his attention, if somebody asked him in person if he had said, you know, prophesied about some calamity coming in the future, he said that prophecy was not something he ever said. That is not something he ever saw or ever reported to anybody. That having been said, there were some visions of his that are absolutely attributed to him, 100% attributed to his own writings and attested to by his brothers in his monastery. These have been confirmed, and they are trustworthy in as much as if you trust Padre Pio. There are some people, for whatever reason, who don't trust him, who think that he faked the stigmata. That is a wicked thing to accuse him of. But that's the world we live in. There are some people who do not want to trust anything from him. Either they are Protestants themselves or have the spirit of Protestantism in them. I'm not sure which it is in any individual case. But he was a stigmatic. Possibly the highest profile stigmatic in the modern world. And here are some of his confirmed visions that he had. Confirmed meaning they are confirmed to have been reported by Padre Pio himself. In December 1902, Padre Pio saw the following, as attested by one of his brother monks. Francis saw on his side a stately man of rare beauty, shining as the sun, that picked him up by the hand and encouraged him with precise invitation. "It is convenient for you to come with me and fight like a good warrior." He was conducted to a spacious country, among a crowd of men divided into two groups. On one side were men with very beautiful faces, and dressed in white dresses, candid as the snow. On the other side, there were men with horrid faces, and dressed in black dresses. They looked like dark shades. Francesco was situated in the middle of these two groups of spectators, and he saw that a tall man, so tall that he could touch the clouds with his forehead, and with an ugly face, came toward him. The character that shined exhorted Francesco to fight against these monstrous characters. Francesco prayed in order to avoid the fury of the strange character, but the bright character didn't disappear. Your resistance is useless. It is worthwhile to fight against this bad character. Please be faithful and enter confidently in the struggle. I will be nearby you. I will help you, and I won't allow him to defeat you. Francesco agreed, and the fight was terrible. With the help of the bright character that always was nearby him, Francesco won the fight. The monstrous character was forced to run away, and he dragged with him the big crowd of men with horrid faces, among howls, curses, and cries. The other crowd of men with beautiful faces roared with applause and praises for him, who had assisted the poor Francesco in that great battle. The splendid and bright character, more bright than the sun, put down on the head of victorious Francesco a wonderful crown that is not possible to describe. But then the crown was removed from Francesco's head, and the good character said, "Another crown, more beautiful than this one, I have preserved for you if you will fight with that character with which you have now fought. He will always return to the assault. You will fight without having any doubt of my help. Do not worry about his strength. I will be nearby you. I will always help you, and you will succeed in winning. Such visions were followed by real clashes with the devil. Padre Pio had several clashes against the enemy hostile to souls during his life. In fact, one of Padre Pio's first goals was to tear souls from the clutches of the devil. That is an excerpt from a book translated from Portuguese or Spanish on the life of Padre Pio, and from the perspective of those who knew him personally. It's an interesting vision. Who was that bright figure? Was that our blessed Lord or his guardian angel? Not sure which myself. Let me know in the comments what you think of that. But his life was dedicated to fighting against the devil for the salvation of souls. His life was dedicated in such a way that every single one of ours should be, and every single priest and bishop and the Pope. The crisis in the church is such that the eyes of many of us, including in the episcopate, have been turned from that very real battle every day to material concerns. And we begin to see kind of some of this here. We have this story that Padre Pio told to another priest in his order, Padre Anastasio. One evening, while I was alone in choir to pray, I heard the rustle of a suit, and I saw a young man that stirred next to the high altar. It seemed that the young monk was dusting the candelabra and straightening the flower vases. I thought he was Padre Leon rearranging the altar, and since it was supper time, I went to him and I told him, "Padre Leon, go to dine. This is not the time to dust and to straighten the altar." But a voice that was not Father Leon's answered me, "I am not Padre Leon." "And who are you?" I asked him. "I am a brother of yours that made the novitiate here. I was ordered to clean the altar during the year of the novitiate. Unfortunately, many times I didn't reverence Jesus while passing in front of the altar, thus causing the holy sacrament that was preserved in the tabernacle to be disrespected. For this serious carelessness, I am still in purgatory. Now God, with his endless goodness, sent me here so that you may quicken the time I will enjoy paradise. Take care of me." I believed to be generous to that suffering soul, so I exclaimed, "You will be in paradise tomorrow morning when I celebrate Holy Mass." That soul cried, "Cruel!" Then he wept and disappeared. That complaint produced in me a wound to the heart that I have felt and I will feel my whole life. In fact, I would have been able to immediately send that soul to heaven, but I condemned him to remain another night in the flames of purgatory. Padre Pio learned the lesson there, a reminder. You sometimes see people talk about purgatory as if it is a joyful thing. Yes, there is a certain joy in purgatory, of being freed from those sins that keep you from fully embracing the love of our Lord. There's also another joy, too, of course, knowing that because you're in purgatory, you will go to heaven, that is guaranteed. But people think it's joyful. Because the mistake they make is forgetting that the flames of purgatory are the same flames of eternal perdition. It's not an enjoyable experience. That encounter from Padre Pio is a stark reminder of that. Now we go to things for those interested in the state of the priesthood and the crisis in the church. In a letter to Father Agostino dated the 12th of March, 1913, Padre Pio said, "My father, listen to our sweet Jesus' complaints. My love for men is repaid with so much ingratitude. Those people who have offended me less if I have loved them less. My father doesn't want to tolerate them anymore. I would like to stop loving them, but..." And then here Jesus kept silent and afterward taken aback. "But my heart is made for loving. The tired men don't try to overcome the temptations. Rather, these men enjoy their iniquities. The souls I love more than the others when they suffer a temptation, when they don't succeed in withstanding. The weak souls are dismayed and desperate. The strong souls trust Jesus. They leave me alone at night and in the morning in church. They don't take care of the sacrament of the altar. They don't speak of this sacrament of love anymore. Also, the people who do speak of the sacrament do it with so much indifference and coldness. My heart has been forgotten. Nobody cares for my love. I am always saddened. My house has become a theater of plays for a lot of people. Even my priests that I have always protected carefully, that I have loved as the apple of my eye, they should comfort my sorrowful heart. They should help me in the redemption of souls. Instead, who would believe it? I receive ingratitude from them. I see, my son, a lot of them that, here he stopped, sobs tightening his throat, he wept, that under false semblance they betray me with sacrilegious communions, stamping on the light and strength that I continually give them. This is repeated in another letter to a letter to Friar Augustine, written about a month later, April 7th, 1913. My dear father, I was still in bed on Friday morning when Jesus appeared to me. He was battered. He showed me a great crowd of priests, among whom were different ecclesial dignitaries. Some were celebrating or were donning or removing their vestments. To see Jesus in this condition caused me much pain. I wanted to ask him why he suffered so much. He did not answer me, but showed me that priest being punished. But shortly after, he looked sadly at these priests, and I noticed, to my great horror, two tears running down his face. Jesus went away from that crowd of priests, and with a great expression of disgust on his face, cried, "Butchers!" Then he told me, "My child, do not believe that my agony has been only 3 hours. No. Actually, I will be in agony till the end of the world because of the souls I love. During the time of agony, my child, nobody can sleep. My soul goes looking for some drop of human pity, but they leave me alone under the weight of their indifference. The ingratitude and the sleep of my ministers increase the agony for me. They badly respond to my love. The greater torment for me is that these people add their contempt to their indifference and disbelief. How many times my wrath was to strike them like lightning, but I was stopped by the angels and the souls who love me. Write to your confessor and describe to him what you saw and heard from me this morning. Tell him to show your letter to the provincial." Jesus continued to talk, but I may never reveal what he said. Those are stark words from our Lord about priests and how they treat the Eucharist and how they treat souls and how with such laxity they offer the Mass. And this was 1913. I remind people, mostly harder line traditionalists like myself, that the errors we saw promulgated in the 1960s and the 1970s by the highest levels of the church didn't come from nowhere. Stories abound of the laxity with which the holy sacrifice of the Mass was offered by priests at that time. Here we see a hint of that in 1913. And not to mention just the lack of care for souls. I'm curious what you think of this. Do you take Padre Pio's warning here? Do you take it to heart? You have a priest suffering in purgatory because he didn't genuflect before the most blessed sacrament of the altar in the tabernacle. Let me know what you think of this in the comments, please. Hey, like and subscribe if you haven't. It does help. So does sharing this on social media. That helps too. And as always, pray for the church. I'm Anthony Stein. Ave Maria.